What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Laura Bialis, Israeli filmmaker of Rock in the Red Zone, about the music scene in Sderot, Israel. We'll also have a visit from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom and Chag Shavuot Sameach. Today is Shavuot, Shavuos, the Feast of Weeks, the holiday on which we celebrate receiving the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai, the greatest divine revelation of all in Jewish tradition. By tradition, on this day 3,200 years ago or so, all Jews stood at the foot of Mount Sinai, and God gave us the Ten Commandments out loud. But the account of these events in the book of Exodus, while stirring, is also pretty cryptic. And since, with the possible exception of the Exodus from Egypt itself, this is the single most important event in the history of our people, we would like to know more about that day, which leaves things open for analysis. There are as many interpretations of what exactly happened on Mount Sinai as there are Jews, but I have two favorite stories that illustrate just how complex the issue of the giving of Torah really is for us. They also illustrate what I call Newton's first law of Midrash. For every rabbinic explanation, for every interpretation, there is an equal and opposite one. The one tale that's used most often to illustrate the Ma'amad Har Sinai, the great events at Mount Sinai, tells us that God wanted to give the Torah, the most precious of gifts, to humanity. So first God went to the most powerful of the peoples of the ancient world, like the Egyptians, and asked them, "Will you accept my Torah, my most precious gift to all humanity?" And the Egyptians said, "Well, what's in it?" And God said, "Thou shalt not murder." And the Egyptians said, "But that's how we decide who becomes Pharaoh. Forget it." God was a little disappointed, but decided to try another nation. God went to the Philistines and said, "Will you accept my Torah, my most precious gift to all humanity?" And the Philistines said, "What's in it?" And God said, "Thou shalt not steal." And the Philistines were startled, and they said, "That's how we make a living, by stealing. Forget it." God was beginning to get discouraged, but decided to try another famous, powerful people. God went to the Canaanites and said, "Will you accept my Torah, my most precious gift to all humanity?" And the Canaanites said, "What's in it?" And God said, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." And the Canaanites said, "No adultery? Well, what's the fun of life without that? We even worship by doing that. Forget it." By now, God was getting completely depressed. Plus, God was running out of credible candidates. Finally, in desperation, God went to the smallest, weakest nation, the people of Israel, who had just gotten out of slavery and had nothing. And God said, very tentatively, "Will you accept my Torah, my most precious gift to all humanity?" And the people of Israel said, "Na'aseh v'nishma. We will do what you command, and then we will try to understand it." That is, we will first do what you ask, and only then pause to try to listen and understand the why behind what you are asking us to do. It's a wonderful midrash on the meaning of obedience and faith, and what a great people we Jews were from the very start. Isn't that nice? But there's another midrash, another rabbinic story on the same theme, equally famous, equally ancient. It says that when we Jews stood around Mount Sinai, we were frightened by all the sound and fury, the lightning, thunder, the earthquakes, the smoke, the shofar blast that heralded God's coming revelation. Finally, our people, the Israelites, shouted at Moses, "We didn't want the Ten Commandments at all." So God picked up Mount Sinai itself from its base, held it over the heads of all the assembled multitudes of Jews, and then God said, "Either you accept the Torah, or I drop the mountain on top of you." At that point, the people of Israel said, "Well, since you put it like that, okay, we'll take the Torah." That tension between the immediate excitement and acceptance of Jewish tradition and a hesitating, uncertain, ambivalent response to the responsibility and commitment implicit in the Ten Commandments and the Torah, well, that's still present in Jewish life today. Which kind of Jew are you? It's sort of the relevant question. But for most of us, the answer is actually a little bit of both. This holiday of Shavuot today is a bit of an orphan holiday in today's Jewish world. Falling as it does in the late spring, early summer, this year during Memorial Day weekend, Shavuot or Shavuos, the Feast of Weeks and of Torah, and coming at the time of the first fruits, is far less observed than Passover or Hanukkah or Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, likely even less celebrated among American Jews than Sukkot, the similarly neglected harvest holiday in the fall. In addition, Shavuot is just a one-day event, 2 days if you are conservative or orthodox, and that means if you don't pay attention to the calendar, you can miss it much more easily than the longer festivals. But that would be a shame, for this holiday of Shavuot celebrates not only the powerful moment when God revealed both presence and purpose to our people and to the world, but also our continuing relationship with a higher purpose. And exploring that relationship is at the heart of the religious experience of the world. To play us in on this Shavuot morning, here's a song about Moses in the wilderness from Sephardic music star Gerard Ederi, a recent guest of Two Jewish, called Ali en El Midbar, My God in the Desert. The text is, "There in the desert I saw burning. I saw the tablets of the law being brought down. And see, the man is Moses our teacher who went up and came down from the heavens above. The angels of heaven want to burn him. Born of woman, why does he seek holiness? And see, the man is Moses, our teacher, who went up and came down from the heavens above. The angels of heaven are jealous of him, a man of flesh and blood. What does he seek in heaven? And see, the man is Moses, our teacher, who went up and came down from the heavens above." Ali en El Midbar for Shavuot.
Ali en El Midbar, vide arel umbrar, las tablas de la ley, vide abashar. Y mirad que signores, Moshe Rabbeinu, que subió y abashó a los altos cielos. Moshe Rabbeinu, que subió y abajó a los altos cielos. Los malachim del cielo tienen por el celo basarvadam que busca en el cielo. Y mirad que signores Moshe Rabbeinu que subió y abajó a los altos cielos.
That was Gerard Ederi singing and playing Ali en El Midbar for the festival of Shavuot today. When we return in a few moments on Two Jewish, our guest, Israeli filmmaker Laura Bialas, will tell us about her latest project, the documentary Rock in the Red Zone, about musicians living under the hail of Palestinian rocket fire from Gaza. Find out how they cope and what it takes to create popular music under extremely challenging conditions when we return in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Laura Bialas is an Israeli filmmaker born in the United States who has a fascinating new project called Rock in the Red Zone, which is doing private screenings and will be out in public release later this year. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you back. Tell us where Rock in the Red Zone came from.
Rock in the Red Zone is about a town in Israel that is famous for its rock and roll scene. And for the last 15 years, I would say, it has been the target of rockets that have been coming over the border from Gaza. And so there's something called a red alert that goes off every time there's an incoming rocket. I kind of made up this thing about the red zone. I mean, it's called a red alert, so it makes sense. But you can kind of see the on the TV when there's an escalation, it looks like a target, you know. So it's like a zone, you know, and it's always red from like yellow to orange to red. So that's where the title came from.
So Sderot has been under rocket fire for a long time. This is a silly question, I suppose, but why did it become a rock and roll haven?
The rock and roll story actually started a long time before the Qassam rockets. It started back in the 90s, or even I would say even in the 80s, with bands that most of the participants were basically from Mizrahi or Eastern. They were basically Jews from North Africa and the Middle East who had settled in this town. Many years ago, in that time, basically Israeli music was very Western, and the culture of these Eastern Jews was kind of, I would say, marginalized. And so a bunch of these guys basically started putting these Middle Eastern and North Africa sounds in their rock music, and it ended up influencing Israeli music. And I would say even today, it's very hard to hear any Israeli music that doesn't have some of this influence in it.
Yeah, the Mizrahi music has kind of taken Israel by storm. We will talk much more with Laura Bialas about what not only what it was like making the film Rock in the Red Zone, but also how rock and roll music has thrived under the shadow of these continuous Palestinian rocket attacks when we come back in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke. Tell us about your product, Freedom Smoke.
Hello, Rabbi Kohan. A pleasure to be here again. Electronic cigarette industry has been around for years. Our product, one of the best things that we've done to improve it, is the base ingredients for our product are brought in from outside of this country. The only place in the world is certified kosher.
Kosher, smokeless, no tobacco, and a variety of health advantages. Do you have a lot of former smokers that have kind of quit because of Freedom Smoke?
Absolutely. We have several people who have written to us as well as told us on a personal basis.
How many flavors are there of what you sell?
Over 700.
And when people walk in the store and they don't know what to do, what do you tell them?
We start them off by finding out what they smoke and how much they smoke. We then set them up with the nicotine level that's appropriate for them, and we find the correct flavor, and that's all that it takes.
How do people find your stores?
They can find us on the internet, of course, freedomsmokeusa.com. We have a toll-free number, 800-705-7013. Word of mouth is really good for our company, bringing people into our stores.
And it's kosher.
That's correct. Yep.
We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. Visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there or the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts. We welcome our Mivina and Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So there are many missions in which Israelis come to the United States and bring their expertise to teach, to speak, to interact. But the truth is, those are not one way. It's not just the American Jewish community getting a taste of Israel and excited about Israel. There's something very important going on that I think most Americans don't understand, and American Jews don't understand even. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I really like the way you put it, that sometimes, you know, the Jews here really love to get like a fresh Israeli taste by hosting Israelis, mainly if they are youth.
If they're young, but also if they cook, cooking's
also
good.
Yeah.
And, or if they sing or dance or something, oh, it's great, we've got this little taste of Israel.
But recently we hosted like a group of teens, four teens that were here in from our partnership region, Kiryat Malachi Chof Ashkelon. And on the wrap-up meeting, it was really, really fascinating to hear them. You know, we asked all the host families and everyone feedback. So one of the teens, he's 17 years old, and he said two things. One, his highlight was visiting La Choya High School. And he said, you know, during the week I visited like the Jewish community stuff, and I felt like home at the first place. You know, it's, you know,
it's Jewish.
We shared history, or we're sharing history, language, so it felt home. But when I went to La Choya School, that's his words, I felt like to go to visit the Jewish community is like to take the elevator, but to go visit like the general community, it's like to take the stairs, like to really get to know my own country through their eyes was like to take the stairs.
Fascinating. Like,
yeah, and I love this. And he mentioned also something on a personal level, because they are staying with the host families. And he said, like, I saw so much respect at the house between the... I want to take this to my Israeli house. And I loved it. You know, it's so naive, so...
Yeah, you know, it's a great statement, which reminds me actually when I saw... Ari Shavit, he said, oh, we really, who's an Israeli author on the radio show, he said, we really love our children. Our children don't always treat us so great, but we treat our children great. And I thought, you know, there's a different dynamic in an American household than there is an Israeli household. Not better, not worse, just different. I think that really helps. The other piece I would mention is one of the things that we talk about a lot is the fact that Israelis don't really necessarily understand the diaspora. They don't understand Jewish communities outside of Israel.
And whether they share holidays or not, the young woman who came to, for example, my synagogue, who was wonderful, you know, they don't send anybody here who's not a great ambassador for Israel. But she said, oh, I love you. I have a rock band. I've never seen anything like this. And look at all the people involved. And I thought, you know, they should understand that there is something vital Jewish going on everywhere else in the world.
Yeah, and they, all of them, all the four said that when they came, like, first of all, they didn't have a clue about the Jewish community. And all of them mentioned that they have a lot of appreciation for Jewish people who lives here, because in Israel it's easy, you know.
Right.
And it's, but here you
Shabbat
make a lot of...
Shabbat is your day off. You don't have to ask for it.
But here you need to make a lot of effort. It's expensive to be Jewish. You need to send your kids to, you know...
Jewish day schools and Jewish
And the food,
schools, right?
To find the food, first to find it, and then it's expensive.
Right.
And so it's on a daily basis that you make decision, I want to be Jewish, how Jewish I want to be today. Like, it's like, it was fascinating again to hear it from 17 year 18 years old. And as an Israeli, for me as a shlicha, like, I was so happy that these kids that are going to the IDF next year, and they will hold gun
in
their
hands,
when they will hold guns, they will understand the responsibility for the Jewish people all over, and not just I was born from age, I don't know why I was dreamed to be a soldier. No, it's not the reason. Now they really have a profound
responsibility for the whole Jewish people. Fantastic. Thanks, Oshrat. We'll talk next week.
Toda Rabbi.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about radical Islam and its effect in some of the Western countries. Let's talk a little bit about its effect in an odd sort of way in America. You know, we've had one successful, sort of the wrong term, effective terrorist attack in Boston at the Marathon not terribly long ago. But there are also Americans who seem... who are not even Muslim, don't come from a Muslim background, don't come from an Arab background, who seem intent on becoming trained as terrorists and going to where ISIS is and being recruited or being part of the Islamic State. I don't understand that. Can you explain it to us?
Well, yeah, first let's deal with some terminology. You know that I love precise and clean definitions.
Indeed.
So, right. The brothers who were involved in the Boston Marathon massacre, which is now being sort of remembered in a defiant way by Bostonians who now flock to watch the marathon to show that they're not afraid and they're not cowed.
Following David Ortiz's great statements about Boston and, you know, now the conviction. So, okay.
Right. So those guys were not Arabs or Turks or Iranis. They were Chechens. At least by ethnicity and by origin and by heritage. And Chechnya is one of those many regions within the Russian Federation that is predominantly Muslim, but not remotely Arab. So I think it might be useful to remind our listeners once again that Arabs can be people of any religion. They can be Christian. They can be Muslim. They can be Jewish. They can be agnostic. It can be anything. It's a question of somebody who is descended from someone whose mother tongue is Arabic, and it's a linguistic grouping only. Muslims, on the other hand, can be Indonesians or Filipinos or Norwegians.
Or Indians.
Or even people from the good state of Iowa,
right,
who practice the religion of Islam. So Muslims and Arabs should never be used as interchangeable terms because it's simply contrary to fact. Okay, having gotten that out of the way, let's turn to the somewhat mysterious question of why Islamic radical organizations and particularly terrorist organizations seem to do so well recruiting in prosperous Western countries like the UK or France, or the U.S., even among non-Muslim populations of people in their late teens or early 20s or even late 20s, what's the attraction? So you are a father of three. Can you imagine any of your kids being attracted by a terrorist recruiter?
I can't. I'm going to start with God forbid, but you know, it doesn't register for me, but that doesn't mean that I'm right.
All right. And if in your head you had to run through closely, like a catalog of all their peers, all the people they know from high school, would you be able to identify anyone who might be a likely candidate to be recruited?
You know, maybe, but if it was, it would be the kid who was didn't fit in, the one who was the least likely to be part of things, I guess.
Okay, so let's follow up on that point next week, because the question is, what makes someone susceptible to this kind of recruitment, particularly someone who's not Muslim and who doesn't do it for religious motivations?
Fascinating. We will talk about it next week. Thanks, Tom. When we come back on Too Jewish in a few moments, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Jarrow Psych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Peter, a tourist, is wandering through the Sinai Desert, but he gets lost and soon is tired and desperate for water. Just as he's about to give up hope, he sees a tiny oasis in the distance. Relieved, he walks to it. But when he gets there, he's astonished to see a sign saying, Moshe's Thai Warehouse. Sitting under a palm tree is Moshe himself, reading the Jerusalem Post. Next to him is a table displaying dozens and dozens of silk ties. Peter asks Moshe for some water, but Moshe says, I'm sorry, I don't have any water, but would you like to buy a tie? And Peter answers, what good is a tie going to do me in the Sinai Desert? I need water. You can stuff those fancy ties. And Moshe says, look, it's no good being rude. If you don't want a tie, you don't want a tie. You're making a mistake, but it's your choice. Peter says, thanks. But do you know where I can get some water? I'm very thirsty. Moshe answers, well, if you walk in that direction, about 30 minutes, you'll come to a restaurant. It's owned by my brother Max. There you'll be able to get plenty of food and water. Peter starts walking and disappears over the sand dunes. Moshe continues to read the paper. An hour later, however, Peter crawls back up to Moshe's tie warehouse on his hands and knees. He's desperate for water, and on his last breath, Moshe asks, so, Nu, what happened? Didn't you find Max's restaurant? I found the restaurant all right, gasps Peter. But Max won't let me in without a tie. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, a special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the second portion in the book of Numbers, Naso. Includes a variety of instructions ranging from priestly organization to the ordeal of jealousy to the voluntary binding vows of the Nazarite. It is a kind of catch-all parsha that is raised to the status of greatness only by one particular passage. Just before the princes of the people bring offerings to mark the beginning of formal worship in the tabernacle in the wilderness, God instructs Moses to tell Aaron and his sons, the Kohanim, to bless the people with a famous formula.
We know it as the Birkat Kohanim, the priestly blessing. This three-part sequence has become the most famous benediction of all. May God bless you and keep you. May God's face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May God's face be lifted up to you and place upon you peace. In Naso, God makes it clear that this is quite a blessing indeed, adding, after the text has been given, that it is through this that the Kohanim will place my name on the people of Israel, and I will bless them. Most of us have heard this triple blessing hundreds, perhaps thousands of times, at weddings, bar mitzvahs, brises, baby namings, conversions, even milestone birthdays and anniversaries. It's included in the traditional Amidah every morning. It receives special musical and ritual treatment on major festivals. It is considered to be the most important of all our ritual blessings. But what does it really promise? Commentators believe that the first part, including the verbs bless, guard, keep, means that God will grant us physical health. The second section, which uses the image of light and the divine face or presence, promises God will give us what we need materially, food, clothing, shelter. And the final phrase, God's presence will lift up to us and give us peace, means that we will have peace of mind, freedom from the tsuris that so often disrupts our lives. All valuable gifts for God to give us. But there's a clue to what else this threefold blessing means in the rituals that still surround it. In Orthodox and some conservative congregations, the elaborate traditional ritual of Duchanan, the way that the Kohanim bless the people on the major festivals like Shavuot this morning, and in Israel, every Shabbat, by the way, includes a special wordless melody chanted in unison with call-and-response format used for every word of the blessing, followed by the congregation singing, Kein Yehi Ratzon, may this be God's will. It's a little weird, but ancient-sounding, powerful, beautiful when done well. The Kohanim cover themselves during this process with large talitot during the Duchanan. They cover their faces as well. There's a tradition that the congregation should not see the face of the priestly descendants as they chant the words of the blessing, because by tradition they attain a little bit of the divine radiance of the Shekhinah with which Moses himself was blessed on coming down from Sinai. We are to soak up that radiance, but not gaze upon it. In effect, the public ritual associated with the Birkat Kohanim is designed to remind us that God is present always. The content of the blessing, meaningful as it is actually secondary. It is the understanding that God is truly present for us and places that presence upon us that is central. When we repeat this formula, we are reminding ourselves that God can and should be in our lives always, and we simply need to be aware of that presence in order to receive these divine blessings. To that, we can all answer, Kein Yehi Ratzon, may this be God's will. When we return in a moment here on To Jewish, our guest, filmmaker Laura Bialas, will explore the complexities of making a documentary about rock musicians living and performing under the reign of Palestinian terror rockets from Gaza. Find out what that's like when we come back in a few moments on To Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the... at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Hazelu,
Proving that he is, if nothing else, a politician, Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu retreated from his controversial Israeli Election Day comments in a meeting with European Union Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini last week. Netanyahu said, "I want peace. I am not for a one-state solution. I support the vision of two states." That will be news to many Israeli voters. The Likud leader also added that Palestinians must recognize Israel as a Jewish state. "I am committed to peace. We have taken steps to help the Palestinians. We will continue with these measures. I want a peace that will end the conflict once and for all." The fourth-term prime minister then pivoted to his campaign against Israel's nuclear ambitions. "The peace and security of the world demands that we insist on a better deal with Iran. Even now, sanctions are being lifted because of the agreement in Lausanne." Mogherini said that the international community's efforts on Iran were intended to assure that Iran does not possess a nuclear weapon. She praised Netanyahu for his commitment to peace, interesting, and said the EU is prepared to assist in renewing the negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians. More words. In other Israel news, a Palestinian terrorist who plowed his vehicle into a group of border policemen in Jerusalem last week was related to the gunman responsible for a previous attack 7 years ago in 2008 that killed 8 Jewish students in Jerusalem. Amran Abu Daim of Jabal Mukaber was shot and killed by police after veering off the road and ramming his Jeep into a group of policemen who were on a routine patrol in the Eitur neighborhood next to Hebrew University's Mount Scopus campus last week. The incident is being treated as another lone wolf attack. According to police, the suspect is related to Ala Abu Daim, the Palestinian gunman who stormed the Merkaz Harav Yeshiva on March 6, 2008, killing 8 students before being shot dead himself. All but one of those victims were under the age of 18. That Palestinian terrorist gunman was killed by an IDF soldier. Last week's Palestinian terrorist, Amran Abu Daim, had links to Hamas's military wing with family ties to the group as well as a social media trail. Daim was shot by a fourth officer on the scene after he tried to back up his vehicle and run over the first 3 injured officers again. Several local residents thoughtfully pelted police and rescue services with rocks after the incident. This was the latest in a string of lone wolf attacks by Palestinians using cars to ram pedestrians or police, a trend that began in Jerusalem in October but has also spread to the West Bank. Last week, 4 people were hurt when a Palestinian motorist plowed through a bus stop outside Alon Shvut in the Etzion block. The suspect arrested is a Palestinian resident of Hebron. A month ago, on April 25th, 3 policemen were injured in a car ramming attack in the Eitur neighborhood near the site of last week's incident. Police fired on the vehicle as it sped away. Security forces later apprehended the driver. Earlier that same day, a Palestinian teen from Eitur allegedly attempted to stab a border police officer at a nearby checkpoint. A police officer shot the knife-wielding 16-year-old dead. In other news, following up on a continuing story, the Palestinian Football Association, a soccer group, rejected an Israeli proposal to address its grievances and will introduce a motion to expel Israel from international soccer competition at the May 29th yearly Congress of FIFA, the body that governs international soccer. According to the Palestinians, Israel unjustly restricts Palestinian players' travel between the West Bank and Gaza and is breaking international law by fielding teams in West Bank settlements. Israel has cited legitimate security concerns as the basis for travel restrictions. FIFA President Sepp Blatter arrived in Israel last week aiming to solve the disputes and prevent the motion from coming to the table. To pass, it requires 3/4 of FIFA's 209 member states to approve it. Israel's proposed giving Palestinian soccer players special ID cards said it would provide an escort for them between the West Bank and Gaza. Israel would also place special officials at border checkpoints to help ease the soccer players' crossing. But the Palestinians rejected the Israeli proposal, so they would introduce the motion at the FIFA Congress as planned. The Palestinian Federation is acting in the interests of soccer, in the interests of FIFA statutes, and above all, in the interest of the footballers of Palestine, Jibril Rajoub, the head of the Palestinian Football Association, said. Mind you, Jibril Rajoub was Arafat's chief of security and known for notably brutal repression of Palestinian dissent. He did far more than stop soccer players from traveling between Gaza and the West Bank. Rajoub was eventually displaced in the Palestinian hierarchy, but he is back, as so many crooked politicians are, and now he is focused on embarrassing Israel internationally through soccer. Strange, but true. In fascinating and happier news, the oldest person ever to receive an earned PhD, Ingeborg Rappaport, successfully defended her dissertation in her Berlin living room before the current dean of the University of Hamburg Medical College and two of his colleagues. She is 102 years old. Originally, she submitted her thesis in 1938, but the University of Hamburg was an enthusiastic adopter of Nazi ideology and practice, and they were not about to award a new doctorate to a Jew, or even someone raised as a Protestant but with a Jewish mother. Rappaport immigrated to the United States, where she earned a medical degree, married an Austrian Jewish immigrant, and became a neonatologist. The couple and their three children later immigrated to Germany, fleeing American government persecution during the Red Scare of the 1950s. Dr. Rappaport now lives in Berlin. The university has scheduled a ceremony in Hamburg on June 9th when Rappaport will become, by all available evidence, the oldest person ever to receive an earned doctoral degree. Guinness World Records previously cited a 97-year-old German as the oldest recipient of an earned doctorate. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We welcome back our guest, Laura Bialas. She's the filmmaker of Rock in the Red Zone. In the interest of honest disclosure, I should let people know that I've known Laura since she was a confirmand of mine in Santa Barbara, California, about a couple years ago. And she's since become an accomplished filmmaker living in Israel. Laura, you lived in Sderot for a while. Tell us a little bit about that experience and about how the idea of making a film about the musicians from there came about.
Well, I before I lived there, I just went to make the film. I found out that this small town in Israel was getting bombarded by rocket fire, and it sounded totally crazy to me. This was like 8 years ago when I started out, and I didn't see a lot of that information about that anywhere in America in the mainstream press back then. And when I did a little bit more research, I found out that this town was kind of known as like the Liverpool of Israel. And so I just kind of asked the question, you know, I wonder what it's like for musicians who are trying to create in a war zone. What is it like to have to run from an alarm all the time? How does it affect their music? How does trauma play into it? I just picked up my camera and went. it was really like a calling. I just thought, I have to go. I have to tell this story. Something was definitely pulling me there. And I basically landed on this incredible story when I got there.
So if this is the Liverpool of Israel, who were John, Paul, George, and Ringo?
Well, there's a few bands. From Sderot that have become very famous all throughout the country. One of them is called Sfataim, which is the lips band. That is mostly ethnic. They play mostly Moroccan sounding music. And then there's this band called the T-Packs. Kobe Oz is the front man for the T-Packs, and they are kind of wild and crazy fusion band of all kinds of different sounds. And they actually went to Eurovision in 2007, which is the year that I heard about all of this, with this crazy song that they had called Push the Button. And then there's Knesset HaSechel, which is Church of Reason. That's the translation. And they're really cool, kind of, I don't even know how to describe them, but they have an amazing sound, and it's kind of hard to explain in words. You just kind of have to hear it. But they are still, they, you know, for 20 years now, have been like a huge band in Israel. So, and then there were individual artists that I came upon as well that I decided to follow, who were, you know, kids or up-and-coming artists, Avi Vaknin and Micha Biton, who were working in Sderot at the time that I showed up with my camera.
You know, it's a funny thing. Sderot, if you go there, and I've been there a couple of times, you go there, it looks from the outward appearance like a kind of a lovely town. You can see the Mediterranean on the other side of Gaza. You would think, wow, what a pretty place. I can see why people would want to live here. And then you see the hardened kind of concrete shelters over all the playgrounds, and you know that everybody knows exactly where the shelters are because rockets come in. Not just occasionally, but really all the time. Have the musicians moved away?
Well, yes and no. I would say, you know, some of the music that I was following, some of the bands that I feature there, actually moved away many years ago, before the rockets began. But then I just kind of reference them in the film, and I kind of get into their story and how they became so successful. But what I really did in the film was follow people who were living there under the bombings. And this is up-and-coming artists that were, you know, creating under this situation. So a lot of the people are still there. Some have left. Some people leave just for other reasons. I know that basically my should I give away the whole? I don't know if I should give away the whole story. you know what I'm talking about.
I think you can. It's okay.
Okay. Well, what happened during the course of the filming was that I ended up Avi Vaknin, who was one of my sort of star characters, who I was following, whose music was really influenced by his experience of living under this rocket fire at the time. And he was also working with a group of kids at the time, which was really amazing because they put their fears and their feelings about their sort of traumatic feelings into these amazing lyrics. And it was an outlet for them, a creative outlet for them to get that out of themselves and just get it out there. And we ended up getting together and falling in love and getting married, and I ended up basically moving to Sderot, which is kind of a little bit of a spoiler alert.
Yeah, those spoilers.
but you know, like we decided that we weren't going to leave in the midst of all the crazy escalation and the attacks, because there was a feeling of like you're abandoning, you know, your friends and family. But then when things were quiet, because this thing went in waves, we kind of felt like, okay, we want to go to the big city for our careers to sort of expand our horizons and our opportunities. And that's what happens to a lot of these artists and musicians. And I think in some ways my story is not just about, you know, these musicians living in a war zone, but it's also kind of about a small town that's out in the sticks, you know, and how people, how there's a love for that town, how there's a nostalgia for that place, how it's a part of you, but how sometimes you have to leave that place. So the leaving is not always necessarily connected with a fleeing. But some people did. Some people definitely did leave because they just couldn't take it anymore.
So I don't know how many of our listeners know this, and I know that lots of Americans don't. But, of course, people living under a pretty much daily flow of rockets falling on their heads, on their buildings, on their streets, often develop forms of PTSD, other psychological issues, and I know there's a lot of counseling offered in Sderot for that. Was the rock music therapeutic in some ways?
Well, I really found that the kids, because I worked, I filmed a lot of kids groups, a choir I filmed, which was funny because I used to be in a choir. And
yes,
you know.
I know you were in my choir.
I know. And I also filmed this hip-hop group that was practicing in an underground bomb shelter.
Now, you were not in a hip. I did not conduct you in a hip.
I was not in a hip hop. No, I was not in hip hop. Definitely not. Not cool enough for that. But I have to say that a lot of the kids that I became very close with during this and I'm still very good friends with, I saw that when they had music as an outlet or as a goal, even, let's say some of them sang about the conflict and that was their outlet, and some people, they just had, you know, very specific dreams about singing, and they had concerts to practice for, and they had rehearsal, and they met with their singing group and their voice coach and their and I saw that having that goal and that passion somehow alleviated some of the effects, that those kids seemed pretty much normal even under these insane circumstances. And throughout the course of filming, I found out things that had happened to some of them. Some of them had lost friends. Some of them had been present when during an attack when their friends were, you know, totally, you know, mangled and were being loaded into ambulances. So, but the focus on, you know, having a goal and having a creative role, and I think it was incredibly effective and important in their lives.
You know, 8 years is a long time in a creative process.
Yes.
So, in a way, it's a child. Can you talk about the experience of seeing Rock in the Red Zone finally coming to screens?
Sure. Well, first of all, we are still figuring out our plan for, we're hoping in the next few months, hopefully, to be releasing in the U.S. We started out by releasing the film in Israel first, and it's been fascinating to see the kind of reactions that we've been getting. I think what's shocking is that a lot of Israelis that don't live in Sderot, who've come to see the film, be they from Tel Aviv or Jerusalem or other cities, told me that they had, even though that Sderot was in, you know, the nightly news, it would say something like, two rockets fell in Sderot today, no injuries, or one person lightly wounded, or something like that. They had absolutely no idea what that looked like until they saw my film. So on some level, that was a satisfying, you know, response, because I felt like I was reaching out, I was reaching people and telling the story. I think what was very bizarre was showing the film to residents of Sderot. Some of them were, you know, they felt that it was a proper representation, but it's also, I'm also an outsider. I'm also telling a story from sort of a 30,000 feet view. And some people got up out of the Sderot premiere and said, I can't believe I lived here. I live here.
Wow. That's amazing. So they're seeing their own place in a very different way.
Yeah. They said it was like seeing like an X-ray or something, or some weird, you know, picture that they don't usually get to see. It's been fascinating. I had one person who is a member of a Palestinian-Israeli cooperative group that told me he wanted to bring the film to Ramallah, which
yeah.
is something that was kind of surprising to me. And he said it was the first Israeli film that really showed what was going on the ground that he felt was like appropriate to bring. There's been some very interesting responses. Many different responses.
Well, that's a fascinating.
It's exciting to see that.
It is exciting. I want to thank Laura Bialas for a great visit here on Too Jewish. The film is called Rock in the Red Zone.
You.
The Facebook page is available and up, and you can find out more. And best of luck with the film, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Laura. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. when our guest will be the Chancellor of Jewish Theological Seminary, Arnold Eisen, discussing the status of the conservative movement in Judaism today. Our playout this morning comes for the holiday of Shavuot, the time of receiving Torah, and it's called Ki Heim Chayenu. These words of Torah are our life and the length of our days, from Avanim, our house rock band. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavuot Tov, a good week, Chag Sameach of Shavuot, and a week, we pray, of peace. I'm the gay old mama.